rules everything around me. Green, get the money, dollar dollar bill, yo.
What is going on, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. This is episode 28, recording on August the 9th on a Wednesday. And this will be coming out on Thursday the 10th, and you might start seeing it coming out on Thursdays from this point on. With me for the week are two guys who just happen to be my favorite guests of the season. They are both making their third appearance each on the show. I promise at some point I'll have people other than these two, but I just really enjoy talking to them, and especially in the podcast setting. And I figured, why not bring them two together? First is old friend Sammy Reed. You can find him at Sammy Reed FI. I'm sorry, man. It's no underscore, right? On the Sammy Reed, it's just Sammy Reed FI still?
Yeah. I got to get rid of that. Fantasy Insiders doesn't even exist, but I'm just like way too lazy to change it. Like half the people think it's Sammy Reed FL. So they think I live in Florida.
Yes. Or like, you know, like the NFL, but Sammy Reed FL. But anyways, dude, this is my, you know, one of my good friends from a long time ago. We're roommates in First Pitch Arizona many years ago. One of the funniest dudes in the industry. Also has an amazing podcast, poker podcast. So he's a professional poker player. And we'll talk a little bit about that because he had a recent trip into the World Series. So Sammy, thank you for coming on. And the other man here, you've heard him a couple times, came out in the preseason, came out a couple months ago, and that's Daniel Prepas. Call him Dan, call him the Surly Attorney. Let's get surly, whatever you want to. His Twitter handle is Studs Turkle Fan. And actually, Dan, I wanted to give you a chance to explain it because I know you were kind of bummed you didn't really get to talk about it. And I actually butchered it. I think I called it Stud Sterkel. And I didn't really know who he was. And so, you know, I kind of sad for myself that I'm not as cultured and literate as I thought I was. So if you could, first of all, welcome and tell us about Mr. Turkle.
Oh, I appreciate the platform because that's the whole point of the handle is to make people aware of it. Because I actually like to think of him as the godfather of radio. And so now that kind of podcasts have come back and they're kind of the new big thing, I think it's a crime that people don't know who he is because he's basically the gold standard for interviewing on radio. He's interviewed everybody that's the biggest. He's old soul. You look at a picture of him, it looks like Rodney Dangerfield. Guy smoked cigars his whole life, like George Burns, lived to 96 or something. But what he did better than anybody else, and people should look up to him for, is nobody interviewed people better. And that's all he did, is he wanted to interview people, hear their story, didn't interrupt them. All he cared about was their point of view. He humanized, and in this day and age, all the, I don't know, cheese dicks and political shows or all that bullshit, they just demonize. So he's kind of what everybody should. It's actually kind of sad that people don't know who he is. So I would encourage people to read up on him and specifically read his book Working, where he interviews people and just asks them what they do for a living and what makes them work. And to me, that's what it's all about. That's how you change things. But I don't want to go too off on my soapbox. So thanks for the platform.
Yeah, I like that. And you're right. It is something that's really unique. It does make me want to kind of look into him, maybe listen, see if I can listen to some of his old spots and just kind of read up on him. I'm totally, obviously very curious. I definitely don't see myself in that way because I do care about facilitating discussions and hearing what people's stories and things like that. But then also I'm a little not selfless in the fact that I'm always kind of thinking how I relate to it and like what I can bring up to it. And so I'm not quite, you know, studs in that way, but I do have like a great friend named James. He's been my best friend since we were maybe 12 years old. And we were both like Russian Americans, but you know, parents both came from Russia, you know, in their 20s. And he's just a very unique guy in that he's the person that like always asks. He's not even on Facebook or any social media, but he just knows when everybody's birthday is. He doesn't send a text. He doesn't remember. He calls people. He straight up calls. He always asks how you're doing, how the family is. If there's any sort of like, you know, death in the family, emergency, whatever, he's always the first one to call. Just a really selfless person. I know we all, it'd be nice for everyone to have someone in our lives like that. I'm lucky that, you know, that I have him. And, but yeah, that's a, you know, that's a very interesting story. What do you think? Do you know anything about studs, Sammy?
No, I was just thinking that maybe next week you need to have Alex Chamberlain on to explain his Twitter handle, and then all the mysteries of Twitter will be solved. And he probably doesn't have as good of a story as Prep does.
Well, yeah. Let me just say one last thing about him to show you what a pimp he is. In his 90s, one of the last things he tried to do was file a lawsuit to stop AT&T from turning over people's personal information to the NSA. In his 90s, one of the last things he did. So that's the kind of guy you're dealing with. A true patriot, an actual patriot, not a bullshit patriot.
We need more Surly.
I'm trying to do what he wants. I don't know.
We don't want to force the Surly. The Surly is going to come naturally.
On me, man. I'm a neurotic guy. I'm all in my head now. Come on.
I love it, man. Well, we'll get a chance to kind of poke at that neuroticism when we get to discussing a certain SoCal baseball team. Actually, we'll talk about all three of them. It's kind of funny. We all represent Sammy has his Bay Area ties from his youth, but obviously, you know, lived in San Diego. Padres are his team. You've got the Angels. I've got the Dodgers. So we kind of got that little trifecta covered. But before we get into some baseball, Sammy, I did want to, you know, touch up on your experience. I was just really curious. Like, I've talked about like being selfless. Like, I was rooting for you so hard at the World Series of Poker. Like when you got in and you were there, I don't know why. I was just like, I really want to see him like on the big stage, like get to the final table, just like be famous. I feel like you deserve it. So, I mean, tell us a little bit about like getting in, what it was like being there, and just kind of like the whole story.
Yeah, it was a really cool experience, man. It was one of these things where, like, I'm a predominantly cash game player. I really don't mess with live tournaments hardly at all. All the tournaments I've mostly played in my life have all been online. And, you know, for years, my wife's been like, you need to play the World Series. You need to play the World Series. My friends have like, you need to play. And I'm pretty grateful that, you know, I kind of arrived in a point in my life where I'm able to. And so, like, we did this whole thing. I have a really good buddy, his wife and his kids, my wife and my kids, all our families. We got this giant Airbnb and went out to Vegas. And yeah, I got to play a couple events, including the main event, which is like the biggest poker tournament in the world. It's a $10,000 buy-in. There's 10,000 people in the tournament. So there's like $100 million in the prize pool. And it's just like the most intensive thing like you've ever been in. I mean, you're playing 10 plus hours of poker a day. You're at the casino for like 13, 14 hours. It is really like this like mental, emotional, strategic, I mean, just all this grind, right? All this kind of like pressure and all these different things going on, you know, so much energy in the rooms, like famous poker players just all around you at your table, you're playing against them. It was a hell of an experience, man. It was great. And you know, obviously I didn't make the final table because I'm not rich and quit my job and out on a yacht with 10 girls named Tiffany right now. But I had a great experience. I think I made it like 2.5 days into the tournament, which is pretty far. And then I also played like the mini main event before that. And I actually cashed in that tournament. I got to meet some super cool ass people, like people I converse with on Twitter. I got to meet Justin Herzig and Liam Murphy. Prep, you know, awesome. Those guys.
Yeah, football guys.
Best Ball Mania champions. Those guys were super cool. You know, some people who listen to my podcast. I got to meet Aaron Hendricks, who's a Roto Grinders editor. He used to edit my columns, Vlad.
Oh, wow.
When I wrote the read option, he was out there playing the main. So I got to meet him. And man, it was just a hell of an experience. I mean, it is just like so intense, but so fun. And I don't anticipate that I'm going to miss that tournament like for the rest of my life. As long as I can help it, I want to go every year.
What about the people? I mean, obviously you said everyone's cool, but just, I guess, in relation to you've been coming to the main event in Las Vegas for the NFBC for years, and yeah. I hate to relate to it. I know it's kind of a different vibe, obviously a little slower, even a little less competitive. Other than that one dude, Ken, who years ago had the number one, he had the first pick in his draft, and where everyone's just kind of shooting the shit like before the night before or whatever. And he like was secretive about his first overall pick. It's like, bro, no one's going to take your pick.
You can't get sniped.
Yeah, you're not getting sniped. But just as far as like, you know, and they're obviously different experience. And it's not like, you know, Bob Kramatola or like Lindy Hinkleman, who do like, you know, sometimes 3-4 drafts or auctions in a day. Yeah, that's, you know, it's pretty intense, and but it's different, right? In that way, it's a little bit more like you got to be even more on it, right? Is there any relation whatsoever?
Yes and no. I mean, you're playing against the best players in the world, and so that's really cool. But I think the difference is like when you draft, obviously you're kind of going head to head. You know, that's where like that interpersonal kind of competition comes. And then kind of throughout the year with Fab and all that, you're kind of directly competing. But in a lot of ways, fantasy baseball is a little bit isolated in that sense. Like you never have to interact with your competition if you don't want to. You don't have to make it a personal thing. You can wall off as much as you want to and kind of just make it you and the computer screen and you're doing your thing. And poker, especially live poker, is so different because you're there in the moment and you're competing directly in the moment. And, you know, if you're in a pot against somebody, only one person can win that pot, as opposed to like you're in a snake draft and it's like, okay, you sniped a guy that I wanted. Well, you know, I have a queue this long. I can pivot this way. I can do that. In poker, there's none of that, right? In poker, it's like, yo, we're going heads up right here, and somebody's going to outplay somebody else probably. And so, yeah, there's a lot more kind of direct competition, I'd say, in poker, like in the moment for sure.
Dan, I know your poker skills, but I'm curious, how do you think it would translate given the fact that the last 2 years at the main event, you at least say that your draft had gone off the rails, where you kind of just missed in a very obvious Mike Trout, right, in the second round when he fell 10 picks, and then last season, I mean, the teams always end up okay, but
not
I know in the
year.
Moment you're kind of freaking,
this
no?
Year. I don't know. It's one of those things where, like, you know how it is, Vlad, when you're in the zone, you're picking the guys you know you like, and I don't know, call it the inner demon, or if we're going full Judaism, the Yetzer Hara. I'm trying to sound smart there. But like in this draft, it's like, hey, let me make picks that I would never normally make. Let me take a bunch of first pick basemen in a row. And then it's like I'm psyched out. So to answer your question, I think I would be fucking horrible at poker because when I get in the moment, like it was actually funny with Waxman. I was so out of it. Like I didn't sleep well. I'm making excuses. And I remember picking, I forget who it was. And like, I didn't even have the patience to wait till the draft was over to do some kind of confirmation bias rosterbation. I was doing it in the middle of draft. And Waxman looks at me and goes, what the fuck are you doing? Are you looking at the guys you just drafted? And I'm like, I don't know, man. I'm tilting. I'm off the rails. Leave me alone. So, yeah, to answer your question in a long-winded way, I'd be a horrible poker player. I've won a couple of times with friends, but I wouldn't dare try to do it. I don't have the emotional intelligence.
So I wanted to ask you, and I guess while you're on a roll, the Angels, man, what in the hell is going on with the Los Angeles Angels? And I know you can ask that question almost every single year, but I guess you think that it might make you feel better to just kind of get things off your chest, because I know it's probably been building up, and obviously you had the trades that came through, and I mean, they did seem exciting at the time. It's, you know, the thought of like, hey, they might maybe be going for it here. Hey, maybe we can keep Ohtani. Maybe Trout will stick around. Maybe we'll get in the playoffs. And then they lose those games, like consecutively. Like, what was it, like 6 games in a row? Carlos Estevez, who's probably on some of your fantasy teams, literally sticking it to you, right?
Thank you.
How do you feel about all this? And where is the light for the LA Angels?
Well, let me do something I don't normally do, and let me give you a positive spin on it, because I know you like to tell me that I'm always viewing things negatively, which I really appreciate. Thank you for reinforcing that. Much appreciated. The positive is when you get so upset for so long, and they do this every year, you kind of reach a point where you're just like, no, I don't care. It's kind of like baseball fandom depression. So after they blew that first game at Seattle, I was like, okay. They're going to do it for the rest of the series. They're going to lose by one run. They're going to blow it. And so that's what happens. I spoke to my dad today, and he's like, can we lament about the Angels? And I'm like, why? What's the point? Doesn't matter anymore. I mean, I think the best way to sum it up is I think definitely in the last decade and arguably in the history of the baseball, there's never been a more pathetic, underachieving team relative to expectations, relative to money. You name it. So you kind of got to accept that. As far as what they did, I think you talk to any Angel fan and they say the same thing. Was it crazy and kind of reckless for the future to make all those trades? Sure. But why the hell not? Might as well go for it because nothing else is working. So I'm glad that they sold out, you know, getting all the boys back, Krohn and Grichuk. And I guess hypothetically there's a chance, but like, honestly, I've kind of run out. I just don't care anymore. Trout's always hurt. I think every Angel fan would say the same thing. We'd like to see Ohtani on a winner. And, you know, as an example tonight, seeing Lorenzen throw a no-hitter, which was amazing if you watched that game, that whole game. You know, it came from the Angels. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, if I was an agent, which I am in my dreams, I would say what we need to do for your career is you need to sign with the Angels, just stick it out for a year, and then leave. And that will be a road to success. They will set you up for success. So I say all that to mean it's a train wreck. It's the worst of the worst. And honestly, if you want to blame one person, you got to blame Moreno because he's a horrible baseball owner. He's an ad genius, but he's obviously a dickhead. I mean, if he gets along with a guy like Anthony Rendon, who is clearly a, you know, supreme dickhead, like guy's showing his character. He doesn't care. He's like, I'm not going to interview. Oh, wow. Really? So I guess I've kind of run out of being upset. It's just really sad and pathetic. And I think every Angel fan is kind of in the same boat, which is like, they're done. Don't care. Tired of getting upset. Because honestly, if you look at the games this year, Vlad, like last year, do you know how many games they've blown this year? Close games, things like that. I mean, I don't have it in front of me, but that's what I'm saying. You kind of have to embrace the horror, just accept it. So hoping for Ohtani to win the Triple Crown. It would be nice if Trout could play for another week this year, but I think that his career is not looking good. It reminds me of Griffey's second half of his career. So that's all I have to say about that for the next 2 minutes, but you can come back to me and I'm sure I can get pissed off more. So there you go. I'm done.
I got a couple questions. Anything you want to say there, Sammy?
I was just going to say, I actually love that Griffey comp. And not love and like I like to see it, but I think that's a really good comp.
So my
I appreciate that.
My questions are, well, first of all, Anthony Rendon. I had no idea what a jerk this dude was. I had no idea up until, you know, obviously, you know, the fight or when he punched the fan. Even then I was kind of like, you know, kind of looking for ways to not defend it, but, you know, justify things. Like for fantasy wise, he was a guy that was going around 200, 240. And I just got locked in. I was hooked in and I was just like,
me too.
You know, people telling you he's dead and that he's done and he's lazy. And I just didn't believe it. And then just over the last few months, that character has really been shining.
It really has.
And then seeing old clips that I had never seen before, just like where he's like completely rude and obnoxious to like, to reporters, asking him questions, like making fun of like, you know, this was really offensive, like making fun of people for putting guacamole or avocado on their tacos. We're like, bro, now you've gone too far.
Yeah, I think sometimes we forget, you know, especially with our fans. And I mean, the fact that I'm somewhat grateful the guy doesn't even have enough fucks to fake it. But I think sometimes we forget that even though we like guys, even though they smile, there's some shitty out people out there. He's one of them. I'll give you another vignette, although everybody knows this guy's a jerk. I worked for Lee Steinberg and Jeff Morad. The summer after my junior year. And it was an amazing experience. And I begged them to let me go to the All-Star game up in Seattle because they hosted the party and they let me go. And it was amazing because I had the badge on, you know, that shows that you work there. And so of course it was the easy excuse to be like, hey, how you doing? You know, are you having a good time? You know,
this is
like,
what year?
This is 2001. It was Ripken's last All-Star game. You remember the one where Lasorda almost got like killed by a baseball?
Yes.
Yeah, and so, didn't Rip win the All-Star Game MVP that year?
Yeah, he did. But everybody that I went up to was so nice. Like, got to see my boy Gloss and said, appreciate you taking that HGH. We needed it. Got us, you know.
San Fernando Valley represent.
We won the World Series. I'm my old age is starting to get to me. But I'll never forget that everybody was super nice. I was talking to all these guys, like the cast from Dawson's Creek. And then I saw Chris Berman. And I said, hey, sir, how you doing? Are you having a good time? And he goes, he looks at me with this look, looked all disheveled. He goes, who the fuck are you and why are you talking to me? I was like, oh, all right.
Wow.
Much appreciated. So, I mean, everybody knows that clip. I mean, Jesus, you know, you've seen that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it just, I wanted to obviously tell that story, but it just goes to show you that there's some shitty people out there. And I think there's the same percentage of shitty people in every demographic and everywhere where you go. So that's all I got to say.
And then Mike Trout, curious. Number one, so I pick, so in that online championship, the OC, you and I are battling. We're both in the top 10. You've been in the top three. I haven't quite been there yet. We've got Drew Forte, who's an awesome dude, FDN subscriber. He's in first by a good margin. Toby's hanging around there. You got Guilds, you know, me, you, Bob C's got a couple teams in there. It's a nice mix. I really want it. I'm like obsessing over this team like I never have before on good. A fantasy team. Like,
yeah.
You know, making like, you know, just like really in depth. And I picked up Mike Trout. Somebody dropped him like 2 weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah. So whoa. I got Mike Trout. And I think I had maybe 80 at the time. I spent half. And then I think I overbid. It was like 45 to 16. Most of the people have stopped bidding in that league, unfortunately. And I have like $40 left. And I think I have like some of the most money left. But first of all, when do you think he's back? Do you think he'll do anything? Do you think he'll be helpful to my team whatsoever? And this is independent of, you know, you and I fighting for that. And secondly, is he just going to be an Angel next year by himself? Like, what's the future for Mike Trout?
Well, first of all, I think the earliest he's coming back is the end of this month. And I'm kind of pulling this out of my ass, but I would say if they're out of the playoff race, you know, does it make sense for him to come back? But it's kind of Groundhog Day. I feel like it's that same equation every year. Trout's hurt. He shouldn't rush back, but, you know, it's important for him to go to the team. So I would say, you know, whether we're in the playoff race or not, I think it's probably worth stashing him. My competitor, but I wouldn't expect him back until probably the first week of September at the earliest. You're seeing the things about dry swings and things like that. And I mean, you guys, isn't that usually like a sign that they're at least 2 to 3 weeks away with something like that when they're saying that? I don't know exactly what it is. So I wouldn't drop him, but
no,
have a second stash. Him as far as the future, I mean, he's the opposite of Rendon, right? He's a high character guy. Everyone says, oh, you know, everybody loves the shit on the Angels. Oh, well, you should trade Trout. Trout chose to stay. He committed to the rest of his career. And so if he wants to leave, you know, obviously at this point, I don't think he will. I think he's kind of committed to the team. They gave him that contract. I think that's the guy he is. You never know what's going to happen, but my hope is that somebody gives Artie $1 billion or makes a deal with him to say, hey, man, we'll give you all that land around Anaheim Stadium. You can lease it back. You can make all that money. Just give somebody else control over that team besides you. But obviously he committed to Trout. Trout committed to him. So it's really hard to say what's going to happen, but it's not your typical – you know, a star, he's going to want to go pay for a playoff team. He chose to stay, man. And honestly, more power to him that he's just such a high character guy that, you know, he doesn't fit into other people's narratives. He does what he wants. And obviously people like living in Southern California. It's Ohtani likes doing it. They like playing here, but.
And OC, especially Orange County. Yep. And Orange County, especially, like.
Oh, yeah.
Or Laguna Niguel. It's like, hey, yeah.
You'll like this. I was at I was in Corona Del Mar when I was still living there doing my law practice out there, and I walked by Howie Kendrick, and you know Howie Kendrick. We've always been like way into him, our batting title in the minor leagues and all that. And I felt like such a schmuck because I go up to him and I go, Howie Kendrick, and he's like, yeah. I'm like, hi, Angel Fit. Like, seriously, I'm like, really, like. And he was like nice about it, but I'm just like, yeah. Man, I wish I could do that over. I mean, I've got his jersey from his one All-Star game back in 2011, and I choked hard like at the main event. So,
Did you tell him the gut refers to him in his article in his preseason article every year? The Howie Kendrick late round batting average guy.
It's funny you should say that because right as I was walking up to him, I told myself, don't forget to mention Vlad. Don't forget to plug that. flat, especially because we didn't even know each other yet. But I had that,
you know, oh, yeah, that's
all that. But I blanked on it, man. I choked. I'm a choke artist.
Sammy, on the flip side of things here. So, like, I mean, I don't want to force things. I don't think there's really much for you to rant about. I mean, you could say, oh, maybe if Musgrove's out for the year, that would suck. Blake Snell hasn't quite been like ace, like maybe he won't win the Cy Young like he looked like he might a couple weeks ago. But like, dude, you guys are kind of creeping, probably can snag a playoff spot, and you've got a loaded offense, you got an amazing closer, and you got Haesung Him. So, I mean, you don't have anything to rant about here, do you?
No, absolutely not. You know, I won't take this opportunity to rant about how San Diego's like low key one of the biggest cursed sports towns in the United States that nobody talks about. I mean, the San Diego Chargers, zero championships, lost the Super Bowl. The Clippers didn't win anything and left. San Diego State, my alma mater, went to the national championship game this year, didn't win. And the San Diego Padres have been to two World Series, haven't won either one. Douched me super hard. I had tickets to game 5 of the 1998 World Series, and they got swept in 4. I didn't even get to go.
Hey, fuck Sammy, me, let me just pile on and add into this, because as a true San Diego, you will love this. So I grew up a Rams fan. Vlad, I don't know if you grew up a Rams fan or not, or a Raiders fan.
Yeah, well, I grew up a Raiders fan.
Yeah.
In LA.
So quick side note, I was actually at the Bo Jackson game, but I'll get back to
okay. Side note to the side note.
Side note to the side note to the tangent to the tangent. No, but, you know, when the Rams left, obviously that sucked. And me and my dad were like, hey, you know, we're kind of over it because they're in St. Louis now. So why don't we get season tickets to the Chargers? We got season tickets to the Chargers in Ryan Leaf's rookie year. So that really worked out well. I was really happy about that. Remember all those games, the amazing preseason. I was also at the AFC. Was it the AFC championship game? I think so. The one where, what was his name? The kicker, Nate. I'm blanking.
Nate Kading.
Nate Kading.
That game against the Jets?
That no, the game against the Patriots where they had it, LT's record-setting season, and I'll never forget where they picked Brady and they were going to win the game, but they, you remember that he fumbled the
he like spiked it or something, and like
no, he got stripped. He intercepted Brady, and if he had gone down, they would have won.
Yeah, he just needed to go down. Yeah,
they stripped him, and then it was like, and we just knew it. It was like at the end of the half. Kading missed a field goal. My dad looked at me, goes, they're going to lose because of that field goal. And yeah, so just wanted to add that in, that my two San Diego experiences reinforce the reality and the truth of a wicked curse.
Thank you. Thank you, Prep. It's good to have you confirm that we are indeed cloaked in failure. You know, I'll just say this, like, you guys know, I'm like the hugest Juan Soto stan in the world. He's my favorite player before he even went to the Padres. And so when the Padres traded for him, it was just like the most nirvana I've ever felt as a baseball fan. I'm just like, this is incredible. My favorite player in his prime is coming to my favorite team. We're going to fucking win. We're going to win. And then, you know, we have Manny Machado and Tatis Jr. And we signed Xander, you know, just this like quartet of uber talented, young, swaggy dudes. And it's just like, this is happening. And guess what? It's not happening. This is like, I mean, we may or may not make the playoffs. If we do, I mean, it's obviously a dangerous team, but it's just like, to have this team fall flat and like have so little swag, so little confidence, it's just like, what the hell is happening here? It is kind of it's like the baseball version of Prep meeting Howie Kendrick. It's just like a complete joke off. And it's just like, what's going on here? It's so brutal as a fan to watch this day in and day out. I hate it.
So safe to say your expectations are low, but they can be good. Things can happen. You never know. I mean, if you keep them low, something happens. Same thing, right? You like, you go to like a movie that you're expecting to be like the best ever. And then of course it's going to kind of fail the expectations. Same thing. You go to a restaurant like, this is going to be whatever. Like, oh my God, this is the best meal ever. So, I mean, yeah, this could be that.
Well, let's hope, because expectations have gone from sky high to really yeah. low. So
just remember, even with the lowest of expectation, things can always get worse.
Important. That's the prep we were expecting. There you go. Thank you, Prep.
Yes, baby. Well, let's get surly. All right. Now let's talk some baseball here. Some actual, well, we have been talking baseball, but we've been ranting. Maybe we can go on some tangents of tangents here as well, but wanted to look at things from the 70% mark of the season. That's about where we are at, about 47, 48 games left, depending on when you're listening to this. And seven fab periods left. And obviously a lot of people don't have a lot of money. So just a few performances I wanted to highlight, see how you guys feel about things, maybe rest of season outlook. But I was just looking at some overall numbers of players. And so here we are with about, seven plus weeks to go. And Ronny Acuña, I mean, obviously what he's doing is amazing. You just kind of, you go to the top of like the Fangraphs page or whatever stat page you look at, and you just see those numbers and it's just like amazing. Or you go to like a player, Razzball Player Rater or some, like, and you see like the money earned. It's insane. Like, and I always can't help feel bad for people, perhaps some listening that had a number one pick and like, oh, I'm going to go Trey Turner here, or, I'm going to diversify or whatever. So, whatever. I didn't do that, but there are other things you can laugh at me for like, Carlos Rodon or, Tyler Ward getting one in the head from Manoa and not becoming Yelich. But that wasn't going to happen anyways. But my point is Acuña's numbers, freaking amazing. But him and Freddie Freeman, they're already both at 100 plus runs. Like, this is massive. It's also another reason why I'm looking back at like some of my VDP projections were a little on the high side of things. And I did have, there are certain players I had outliers for that were like above, like, cause my projections are not median. They're kind of a little different. So I think I'm going to be hitting on some of those, which is nice. Nowhere was I close to Acuña getting even 53 bags. I mean, I don't think any projection system had that, but anyways, both of them are at 100 runs plus. Matt Olson's already at 100 RBI. And then Acuña has almost as many stolen bases. He's got 53 as he does RBI, 68. So pretty amazing to see so far, huh?
Yeah, I think it's funny to look at Acuña's stat line. He's hitting .339. He's got 53 steals, 26 homers. And you would say if that was his entire season, he would be the shoe-in number one pick, right? Mm-hmm. Like if that was the whole thing and he's still got 2 months to go, it's pretty wild. Like you guys have played fantasy for a while. You remember like in, the mid late 2000s when everyone's stats were just like completely out of control. Like mm-hmm. people were just hitting 60 home runs and, guys were stealing like 60 plus bases all the time. Like Jose Reyes was, doing this stuff and Jimmy Rollins, these guys were just doing like obscene things that we haven't frankly seen for quite a while in fantasy. And Acuña is kind of that while nobody else is. I mean, obviously some guys are having some big seasons, but like this is literally harkening back to like 15 years ago. We haven't seen stuff like this.
Oh, just like a casual 140 RBI from your third rounder, Maglio Ordóñez,
Yeah.
No big deal.
Oh, that Jose Reyes 2006, I think it was something like 18 homers and 73 steals, maybe 20. That was a sexy season. That's what got, I actually had taken a break for a few years. That got me back in. That was a nice, because I don't even think he was that high of a draft pick in fantasy drafts that year too. Yeah, he went nuts.
And then so Julio Rodriguez, just looking at him for a second, people have been complaining because he had a low batting average for the first half of the season, and I mean wasn't hitting a lot of home runs, and when you pay such a high price, and especially I think I had him maybe fourth in my rankings. I had him ahead of Jose Ramirez, for example, right around Trey Turner. And I mean, relative to your draft spot there and some of the guys you passed up on, that was a little bit of risk. And some of us knew that. We were kind of going on hope of like, okay, this is what he did in his first season. And he struggled in that month of April. Hey, it's only going to get better. We forget about like the ballpark or the fact that sometimes these guys struggle in their second full season, just like so many other things. But lo and behold, he is now, you look at the Razzball Player Rater, for example, that's usually what I use. He's a top 20 player right now. He ranks 18th. He doesn't seem very mid to me. He's on pace for 25 homers, 40 stolen bases, 100 runs, 90 RBI. Just needs to get that average up. I think it was like 259 last I looked. So the comparison that we had a couple months ago was like, where are you at on Corbin Carroll versus Julio Rodriguez? And almost everyone I talked to and asked, everybody was on the Corbin train. But everything is a matter of like a snapshot in time, right? Like if you asked anyone 2 months ago, everyone would say Corbin Carroll, or at least most people would, right? Now you ask today, it's probably a little closer. If Corbin Carroll gets hurt or slows down and then come the end of the season, hey, Julio might be going ahead of him at Corbin Carroll next year if kind of things change in the next couple months. So it's so interesting. I kind of like the psychology of it, of like the same thing, like when you're doing like a Twitter poll, right? You can ask the same question 2 weeks later and you'll get a completely different answer based on like whatever has happened over the last week or two.
I totally agree. And it's one of the many beautiful things about fantasy baseball is the power or the effect of recency bias. It's so much more than fantasy football because it's a shorter season. You know, it's just like you said, people thought, oh, Julio was so bad for 2 months. And then all of a sudden, you know, you surprised me. I hadn't been looking at him. And it's just things like that. It's just, we're all human and we all fall victim to recency bias. And, you know, it's part of the fun of the season. It truly is a grind. Maybe not a 10 hours a day poker grind, but certainly one that I'm willing to deal with.
Yeah, but six months out of the year, all the time, you're at work, you're at home. Yeah, you're waking up. Oh, let me check my standings. I mean, it is a real grind. And I'll say the thing about Julio is, like, I think what he's showing this year almost solidifies his first-round status in that we knew his ceiling, right? He showed, like, a huge ceiling last year, but none of us were quite sure about the floor. And for him to have struggled for such a significant portion of the season and still be able to come out where he is right now as, like, a legitimate, like, elite power speed player – I mean, it kind of speaks to the floor that he has moving forward. And I think that kind of shows what kind of player he's going to be. And I anticipate he's a first rounder again next year.
And a very average offense, by the way. I mean, they've looking at just like, you know, league average against lefties, against righties, and the ballpark kind of sucks for them. And I mean, Jake P. Crawford is a better real life baseball player than fantasy guy, but he's been kind of the leadoff man for a good portion of the season. You're like, you know, I mean, I love Thumper, Cal Raleigh, but I mean, that's like your kind of main, you know, him and Suarez are sort of your main hitters in the middle of the lineup. Teoscar's not been the same guy that he was as a Blue Jay. They got some young kids they just added, but it's, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like a super sexy offense.
And it's a horrible ballpark, like you said. And maybe that speaks to the counting stats. I mean, We knew that Teoscar was going to tail off, right? Not because he was a worse player, but just because of the ballpark effect. Do you think we kind of didn't do that for Julio because of just how amazing he was at such a young age? In terms of why did we kind of write off or just know that Teoscar should be depressed, but we didn't do it for Julio?
You know, that's a good question.
Probably because Julio did it in Seattle already. Whereas Schwarzer was new. Yeah, that's all I can think. But, like, you know, they just got to wait for the golden god, Jared Kelenic, to come back. And, you know, he should be fine, you know.
I forgot about that guy.
Yeah.
Man. So next question. You got a couple of big bounce back guys. One guy, it took him 3 years to bounce back because Cody Bellinger was one of the worst just hitters in baseball after he won his MVP in the National League. And then for three seasons, you know, the COVID year, a couple years after that, and all the memes, he just kind of became a joke. And anytime I would defend him, it was the only time really that I would have just people coming after me, like how much he sucks. Like, this is random people, trolls, fellow analysts. It was like, he is dead. And kind of had that feeling this year, but I still didn't really buy in. And he's obviously like a completely different guy. How much is like, just him getting out of LA, do you think has anything to do with it? Or what is it that, I mean, you have like these great hitting coaches and everybody's working with him in LA and just, it didn't materialize. Like, what is different here with him in Chicago?
I mean, maybe you can tell us, Dodger fan, Vlad.
Don't know. I mean, that's what I'm asking.
I think it's a mental game and he's still a young guy. And he was an MVP, right? Or,
yeah.
An MVP on one of the best baseball teams, you know, there is. And he fell off, you know. That's going to mess with your head. And I think a change in scenery, going to a place where people embraced him, to that point about expectations, I don't think anybody had any expectations. And I think he went in there, low pressure, low expectations, great baseball town. And sometimes that's all it takes because it's such a mental game. He never lost the ability, but he always had a low floor because of the strikeouts. So next year he may suck, but it's a beautiful thing to see him come back because he seems like an awesome guy. He doesn't seem like an Anthony Rendon, I'll put it that way.
I mean, I'll say this about Bellinger. Like, we probably should have, to Prep's point, I mean, this guy's a former MVP. We probably should have kind of given more weight to the fact that this guy has that kind of high-end ability, right? Because he was kind of stuck in this ADP tier with guys like, you know, Riley Green and, you know, Jared Kelenic, you know, Brandon Nimmo, Benintendi, Verdugo, you know, all these guys going around him, and he's turned out to be easily the best of it. But, you know, to me, I'd written him off, right? I kind of tailed you a little bit last year, Vlad, because I know you were big into the Bellinger bounce back. And he had an okay year, right, in terms of, like, power speed, but, like, clearly not the same player. And he had that shoulder injury, right? And he changed his mechanics, and he was lost. I mean, he was completely fucking lost. And somehow he's found himself. And, you know, we can speculate on how that is, whether it's a change of scenery, different coaches, whatever it is. But the reality is that we thought he was dust and he did something to get back. It is truly incredible. He's hitting 330. I mean, 330. Yeah. He has like one season in his career, his MVP year, where he's hit over 267, I think. And certainly, like, there's some good luck inherent there, but he's played his ass off, man. And it's really cool because I think, Vlad, we saw him back in the day in the at the Fall Stars game, right? We're playing DFS and gambling on this dude. And
he was the first time
remember? And it was the first time I'd ever seen him. I'd never even heard of him before when we saw him in Arizona. And I saw his swing like twice. And I was like, holy shit. I've never seen a swing like this. And it seems like he's got – I mean, he had lost it. And it seems like he's got a little bit of it back. So hopefully he stays good moving forward. It's cool to see from him to kind of refine what made him great.
I could give you a bullshit theory that's based on nothing, and I'm pulling it out of my ass.
I love it.
Maybe with the less pressure, maybe he stopped smoking as much, you know?
Or maybe he started smoking more.
Maybe it was better weed.
Maybe Popeye just needed a little more spinach, man, you know?
Probably. Who knows?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. I mean, before this season, but before the previous season, I had basically two insider sort of friends give me different perspectives on Cody Bellinger. And so that kind of, I should have just not leaned towards the guy that was wrong or that was positive. But that's what I did. It's just kind of following my own bias. But yeah, that probably should have been a sign to, like, be careful. By the way, another guy that is just having an impressive year. I have zero exposure to this guy in any fantasy format, and that's Whit Merrifield. He's now become the leadoff man for the Blue Jays. He's got like 20 plus steals. He's hitting some home runs, but not a lot, but enough. And he's hitting 298 so far. So that's kind of a nice little story for them. The Blue Jays are about as they've become as mid as it comes, really. Like, it's really kind of sad. You've got like a, you know, a Bo Bichette, just like a Vlad Guerrero. The guy didn't
hit. Why isn't Vlad Guerrero Jr. any good anymore? Like, he just
hit his first home run against a lefty in over a year just last week.
Dude, what's going on?
I don't know.
Like, this guy is like MVP caliber 2 years ago, like out of hand on the projection systems. Incredible minor league career. It's like this guy is a can't miss. And instead he's just, and who knows, like, he could absolutely be that guy who like Bellinger just refines it in a year or two and has a great career. But like, man, he is like overall disappointing, especially compared to projections and expectations.
Well, the one thing that jumps out at me, and maybe we could look at the numbers, but there is something unique about that year. What I forget, was it 2019 or it was 2020, right? Which one?
21, the year after the pandemic.
Oh, Guerrero?
Wasn't the year that he went nuts when he was playing in Buffalo for part of the season?
Buffalo and then Florida.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, you get on a roll, you get hot, you know. I don't know. That's the only thing that jumps out to me that was different about that year. I don't want to take anything away from him, but unfortunately, that is the outlier year now, sadly, right?
My theory, perhaps, and it might be maybe kind of a little over the top, is I had my strong theory about him that year and why I was all in and why he was like my guy was quotes that I had read about him and I've talked about on this podcast before, from several months before spring training, and how there was that, like, that weight loss.
Yeah.
And it was substantial.
Yeah. We saw the pictures too. We saw Thin Vladdy. We were like, oh snap, here we go.
Yes. And there were a lot of quotes from him about how he has been this major, he was very introspective. This major leaguer kind of grew up to, you know, Hall of Fame, you know, if you, you know, the, just like the Studley family. He was always good and just better than everyone naturally over the years. He didn't really even have to try. And he was kind of lazy in a way. He was really talked about even his dieting, like the nice, you know, fatty meals that his grandmother would always cook. He was so used to them. And then he would just kind of mash baseballs with abandon and never really had to compete his whole life. Everything was so easy for him. And that 2020 season was really a game changer for him. And he said, why can't I be like Juan Soto, like Acuna, like Tatis? Like, I am as good as these guys. And he was really freaking motivated. And I think he's back to eating grandma's, you know, goodies and just kind of being lazy. The team's going sort of nowhere. That's my theory.
Well, here's kind of a silly a correlation, but his numbers were stronger, but maybe that body type, maybe it's just tougher to manage. I mean, look at Prince Fielder. He had two amazing seasons, but he yo-yoed too. He was an even bigger dude. But maybe it's just, you know, people get scared of those body types. And like you said, it's tough. You know, I mean, he's a big boy. He's not like his dad. So maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know.
And if he doesn't get hot and like really kind of step it up with like a home run barrage or the average, he's going to be a nice discount, I think, in drafts next season. It's pretty clear. There are just so many guys that have moved up and speed is now part of the equation. And you kind of need to be the total package where it kind of looks like a liability in those first couple rounds. So he, you know, could be pushed out, could end up being a deal for all we know. A couple other guys here. Washington Nationals, top of that lineup is hot. Lane Thomas, he's a first round value right now. I have no idea what the hell is going on. Another form. We can probably have a whole podcast about how the Cardinals are like they might be the worst organization ever. Like all the guys, the best like stars in the league that kind of, you know, came out of nowhere, but were actually originally good prospects. They were all former Cardinals, like Alcantara, you know, Adolis Garcia, Rosarena. It's an insane list really. But anyways, Lane Thomas, 78 runs. He's 11th in the league in that department, 20 homers, 15 RBI. And then CJ Abrams, by the way, Sammy, you know, will shed a tear. Yeah, although you guys are good. Yeah. You guys are good in the infield.
Are we?
But CJ, he's great. But man, outside of like before he was a leadoff man, basically like almost 300 plate appearances. He was hitting 240, had 11 steals, like an OBP under 300. Then at a certain point, like a couple months ago, he took over as the leadoff man. It's only been 115 plate appearances, but he's hitting 333. He's got a 381 OBP. And in literally a third of the at-bats, he's got already more stolen bases. He's 16 for 16. He's just hot at the top of the lineup. So that's kind of nice there for the Nationals.
Yeah, I think the thing about Abrams is that, you know, we'd kind of drawn some conclusions about him because the Padres were so quick to discard him and he really didn't do well in his very, very limited experience in the major leagues. But when you look at like his prospect pedigree and what he did in the minor leagues, I mean, he didn't have a ton of minor league stuff, but I think in his career, he had a 331 average in the minors. He had 12 homers and 42 steals in like 112 games. I mean, this guy wasn't just like high on the prospect list, but was really good in terms of like statistical production. And so he's mega young. And I think he was just kind of like written off a little too quickly. And, you know, it took him a little bit to like find his groove and he's got it. I mean, this is an uber, uber talented player with a ton of speed. And yeah, I think, you know, a lot of us wrote him off a little too early. I can't explain Lane Thomas. I can't at all. And frankly, there were some sharp people who were on Lane Thomas. So, you know, maybe I'm just missing something, but like,
I'm one of them. Well,
tell us your process, Prep. Like I need to hear this. I need to get better at fantasy baseball. How do you dig Lane Thomas out of your ass?
Okay. Well, that's just it. It's not a process. It's just chaos. It's just bullshit chaos. My cousin once just said, he's like, I have a tough time describing you. He's like, your brain is like a performance of Cirque du Soleil on acid without a composer. And I was like, okay, I'll take that as both an insult and a compliment. No, but Vlad, you remember the Arizona Fall League that amazing 2018 with Pete Alonso, Hira, Vlad was there, Tommy Edman was there, Brian Reynolds was there. I remember reading a quote from Tommy Edman that said Lane Thomas had one of the best power speed profiles of anybody that he saw in the minor leagues. And that just stuck with me. That is not a process, Sammy, but you kind of hear that thing. You look at him, you watch his swings. He's just kind of a smooth guy. And I know CJ was all about him. And I've been drafting that guy like crazy. I have him on the one good team, but it's nice to see that because everybody wrote him off. So
wait, CJ is all about him? Who?
CJ.
Who's CJ?
CJ, how do you pronounce his last name? Kaltenbach?
Nobody calls him that. You mean the Siege?
Siege!
You know, you say CJ, everyone's be like, what? Are you talking about CJ Abrams?
No, we're talking about out here tailing Siege for big picks. Jesus.
Oh, man, he's going to love this. This is gonna be he's going to star this one. This is going to be a pot of the year right here. Mondesi, props man. To Siege.
Ask him what happened to Mondesi.
I'm choking again, man. No, but what is that? It's the here's the other bullshit process part. It's outfield on the Cardinals leaves. Outfielder becomes great. Right, mm-hmm. Randy Arozarena, Lane Thomas. I think there's others, but
there's something to this one. Actually, I think.
I think so.
But like Lane Thomas. I mean, you're talking about whatever 2018. Like that was the last time he showed significant power speed. He was like 27-17 in the minors, 22 years old, and you're like Lane Thomas. And then for 5 years, he does fuck all. And he had an okay year last year. Like, he had some power, some speed, like, low average. It was like, okay, this guy's just a guy. He's a journeyman. And now he just, like, turns into a complete smash show. It's unbelievable.
Well, also people said, oh, he can't hit righties, and we platoon him against lefties. And you know that's always a mistake whenever people do that. That just never helps some guys' growth. So kudos to the Nationals that just basically said, we're the Nationals. We basically have no one, and they gave him rope, and the talent won out.
Funny that our little chain that we've had for years, text chain with Jens Dad, Silver Modica. So previous to last season, to the 2022 season, we all kind of in our own way came to Lane Thomas. Like we liked them kind of independently. And then we kind of all realized it. And then I didn't hear really much about it in 2023. I think maybe a couple of them landed him, but I got none, just absolutely no Lane Thomas. So that's a bummer. It's always nice if you can get like your 22nd round guy be a first round pick. It's pretty damn good. A question about the AL batting race. So right now, Bo Bichette, who is currently on the IL, he's the leader again. It's been yo-yoing, but it's been, you know, Yandy Diaz had a 4-for-4 night and then had an 0-for-4 night to follow. So he just fell. He's right around 320 basically. Bo Bichette's up there. But Corey Seager, he really needs to put in some work to be able to get there. And I would love to see it happen. This is one of my favorite players ever. And he's hitting 354, but in the next 46 games, and he sat as we record on Wednesday, he did not play, resting his thumb or whatever it was. He needs 177 plate appearances. So a little under, I think like 4 per game. It's going to be tough. I don't know if he gets there. Obviously one IL stint, he's done. But it's going to be close. You guys think Corey Seager can get there?
Well, so the math breaks down like this, right? So he's averaged about 4.5 PAs per game that he's played in. So that essentially means to get to 177, he needs to play in 39 of the last 45 games, right? So if you buy that he can play in like 85% of the team games or whatever that is, the rest of the way, he's going to get there. But if he doesn't, he won't. And I think the odds are probably a bit against that, particularly if, you know, Texas gets in the last week of the season with, you know, their playoff spot set or whatever that looks like. You know, he may sit some games out. Obviously, he's got kind of some recurring issues that he's working through. So I think he's probably a bit of an underdog, but it would be really cool to see because that guy's a hell of a player.
Anything on Seager? You want to move on, Dan? Not surly enough for you? You're on mute.
I knew it was going to happen eventually. No. I'm good. You can move on to the next thing.
All right. So let's move a little to pitchers here. And it's kind of funny. So I had a little theory. It was, and it's silly, right? It's all like, you can't really do the what ifs thing. But we do. And it's Max Fried. And just a little tweet I had earlier on Wednesday or Tuesday, I think, one of those late night, midnight thoughts that I had that like, if he had not missed the season or a good chunk of the season, he would be like the top NL MVP candidate, because there's kind of a open road, it seems like to me, because Spencer Strider, you know, seems like the lead there. He's been kind of tailing off, you know, that brutal start. If he has another one, it's probably not too good for him. Blake Snell, he's been great.
Don't worry, Vlad. It didn't hurt any of the Strider owners because they were able to get him out of the lineup.
Oh, yes. Yes. That's a good point. Yeah. Did not hurt, except for those that didn't get there. But Blake Snell, you know, stumbling a little. Zach Gallen, I really don't know week to week. Like, I'm always scared. You either get like an absolute gem or he gets beat up a little bit. And you never know. Like, you can't really play him by matchups because a bad team will beat him and then he'll crush an amazing team. He's been doing that for a couple of years now. And then, you know, Kershaw's hurt. I mean, Justin Steele looks like he's really coming on. I mean, he's just been absolutely amazing. And yeah, people could have been on Justin Steele, but nobody thought of him as in terms of an NL MVP candidate. So with Fried, so first of all, this is not just me kind of moving things on from last year, because in 2022, that was one of my big bets for the season, that Max Fried was going to win the NL MVP. And I was kind of hoping that it wouldn't really be like, you know, for like strikeouts to be a big reason why, because he's not really like a massive 230 plus strikeout type of guy. But to me, it seems like he'd be probably have a lot of wins by this point, like a shit ton of wins. And he's obviously one of the top three ERA guys in the league over the last four seasons. He's a beast. And then ironically, of course, he got hit in his latest start. I think he gave up four runs in four innings. But how do you guys feel about Max Fried, and any chance that he might be at a discount next year just because he's been hurt this year and because he doesn't have that massive strikeout upside?
I mean, I look at him as, although I don't know if he's as high, but it's kind of a discount Urias, only I think he's got more strikeout upside. I still think he can tap into, I think he can get up to kind of 11 Ks per nine. I think there's more there. You watch him, he just knows how to work the plate. Knows how to pitch to righties. I'm with you, Vlad, and he's on the Braves. So I think that's a layup pitcher to buy, because it's almost to our benefit that he hasn't pitched this year, because that'll depress the price. I hope he's not an injury prone guy, but he's that kind of guy that I just never see him all of a sudden slump. He's just a smart pitcher. He's a good pitcher. And I don't think he's a floor pitcher. I think he's got both the wins upside, and I think he's got K upside. It just needs to pitch more, you know?
I just think about it in terms of Spencer Strider, because they're on the same team, right? And it's like, obviously Strider is going to be like the first pitcher taken off the board next year, so I'm not like telling anybody anything they don't know, but Strider's got the second highest BABIP of any pitcher that has 80-plus innings in the National League, right? I mean, he is lapping the field in strikeouts. He's got 211. The next closest NL pitcher has 164. I just think Strider's that guy. Obviously, his like XFIP and his Sierras and all this are just like so far better than any other pitcher. So I do like Max Fried, and I agree with you guys. He will get discounted next year. He absolutely will get discounted next year. And he's going to go more in a spot where I think that we will want to target him, because when he's going whatever in the fourth round or the fifth round, it's like, yeah, you know, like he's a good pitcher, but like, does he possess that upside? Obviously, Prep, you think he does. But in terms of like the strikeout rates he's shown so far, it's like, ah, this guy's more solid than like, oh yeah, he's going to like smash and go off. But I definitely think of the NL Cy Young race as like, man, what if Strider was like a little less unlucky? Like, this wouldn't even be a contest.
Yeah, I don't care what, I mean, I don't care what people project his ratio is at next year. Like, he's just like in fantasy, that's the guy you take, and probably get a little bit of luck, you know, good luck on that front and on the ratios. By the way, that segues nicely into the next question about just the state of starting pitchers in general this season, and how we might adjust in the market next draft season. And perhaps it's a little bit too early to talk about it, but hey, is it ever really too early? There are probably people drafting right now for 2024. But like,
yeah, we're just going to spend five 2024 drafts already.
This guy's a maniac. I mean, do we just have amnesia? Are we going to have amnesia when it comes to these guys? Like, are we going to still push them up next year? Okay, yes. So you got DeGrom hurt, Strider, great, but yeah, ratios are garbage. Corbin Burns was awful in the first half. He's been great, actually, the second half since the All-Star break, in ERA under two. Strikeouts are up. Cole's been great, you know, good, but not, like, amazing. McClanahan's now hurt, unfortunately. Alcantara and Javier have been kind of disappointments. I don't think a lot of people were expecting, like, a repeat from Alcantara, but nevertheless. And then Javier was like the man. He was just, you know, hot, so hot. And that's just been an incredible disappointment. Verlander's not Verlandering. Springs and Rasmussen, those guys got pushed up in the top 100. They're both dead, you know. Eflin, I don't know. It's just a wild, wild west.
Here's the way I'd look at it. I think this year is somewhat of a one-off. And I think a good way to look at it is to heavily discount this year in terms of weighting it versus other years. All the new rules, just seems like everybody, you know, across the board, craziness and things like that. So I think it's a tremendous buying opportunity for guys that, you know, Strider's the extreme example, but look at some of these guys like Wheeler, you know, like a Javier that dipped back. All these guys that underperformed, I just think you want to gamble on those guys, the good teams, the guys at the K upside, the guys that have shown it before, and whether you want to call it the high hit rate or just the balloon DRAs. I just think you really discount this year and you can make a lot of profit by just kind of call it remove the recency bias as much as possible.
So my theory is this. I think Ryan Bloomfield dropped one of his Bloom boards not too long ago, and it showed like the top 20 pitchers, something like that, compared to the top 20 pitchers in ADP. And so many of the pitchers who were at the top were from later rounds, right? They weren't from the top, and this makes sense with all the guys you're reeling off. But that's not something that's especially new, right? This happens all the time. This happens every year. And I think the thing is this. Yeah, I think we will have amnesia. I think especially in the main event, we will go into next year and forget that anything freaking happened, and it'll be, you know, SP glory hole yet again. But I think something that, and you guys are football guys, so I think you'll get what I'm saying. Something really interesting has happened in fantasy football this year, right? And, you know, I've long had this theory that starting pitchers are the running backs of fantasy baseball, right? They are league winners. When you have one of the best pitchers in the league, it does more for you than anything else. And it's the same thing with the running back position. But there's more volatility. They get hurt more. Like, it's a big gamble. And in fantasy football drafts this year, for one of the first times in that I can remember, running backs are really getting pushed down.
Right? I'm all over it. All over it.
You're all over it, right? You're getting these guys like Tony Pollard, who would be a first rounder, a middle first rounder in any other year, and he's going in the mid second, right? You're getting all these guys, you know, Derrick Henry, a little bit older. He's still coming off, you know, 1,300 yards and 13 touchdowns or whatever it was. He's going like the third round, whatever that looks like. All these guys are getting pushed down in a way, and all the receivers are getting pushed up, right? On underdog, it's like, what, the first like three or four picks are, on average, are wide receivers. We haven't seen that in forever. And so part of me, the part of me that thinks we'll have amnesia and everything will be the same next year, I kind of believe that, but I think it's interesting that the fantasy football ADP, the market is kind of corrected toward that. And it makes me think there is a chance next year that we see SPs drop. So I'm kind of like debunking myself here, but I think it's a really interesting dynamic. And I wonder if fantasy baseball fall in that regard.
There's one thing that I'll challenge you on it that's a little bit unique. In football, the best ball craze, especially recently, is a unique thing compared to baseball, at least in my opinion. And because people enter in, not me, I wouldn't be one of these people, hundreds of best ball drafts. I think that plays into...
You would if you could, though.
Sure, of course. That plays into the gambling. And what I mean by that, Sammy, is people want to invest heavily in the receivers, right? Because they're a little bit more predictable. And if you have 1,000 teams, you draft all these teams with seven different combinations of backup running backs. It's the contingent running back play. Why blow capital on it? And if you only had two teams, it'd be a stupid way of doing it. But if you're doing hundreds of teams, all it takes is a couple of teams to hit on some of those running backs. And that's why you see guys drafting six wide receivers in a row. Nobody would do that shit in a regular season-long league. So I just think it's not apples to apples. But I do think you make a good point about I don't think we've ever seen starting pitchers across the board, even the elite guys, take a beating like this year, even in 2019 or call it in 2000 with the Pedro, Schilling, Randy trifecta. They were immune to everything. Nobody's been immune this year. And I do think that that's a unique thing this year to anything it is. So you're right, but for the wrong reasons. So there you go.
I'll take it, man. I'll take it. It's just like when you shove all in with a hand that you shouldn't have, and then you win, and you're like, well, all's well that ends well, baby. Let's go.
By the way, total side note, I had this just late midnight thought a couple nights ago that, like, why is Christian McCaffrey going, like, even sometimes middle of the first, like five or six? It doesn't make any sense to me. It's just something people are really going to regret it, I feel like. I mean, of course, he still has to stay healthy. But somebody asked me this, and I'm wondering what you guys think. Someone asked me, isn't he the Jacob DeGrom of football? What do you say to that?
What? That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. That's not even recency bias. That's moron bias. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, to your point, Vlad, the thing that makes it even more ridiculous is it's like we were drafting him like crazy when he was on the Panthers based on garbage time. He's on an unbelievable team with crazy more touchdown upside. I mean, I think to your point, the more I even think of it, Jefferson's unique. I really do think he should be the clear number two pick, especially if the Burrow injury lingers, and particularly because there's some of that crazy, volatility with some of the running backs with, you know, Dobbins, JT, and all that stuff. So I think by the time I know we're going into football, but I think you're on to something. I don't see why Chase should not go before him, in my opinion, because there's nobody like Christian McCaffrey, and he's on an island. And I think you're right about that.
Well, there's also nobody quite like Jacob DeGrom, you know?
Okay. Yeah. By the way,
this reminds me of my – what's going to end up being my number one rule or a new adjustment to my process, an adjustment that I tell myself I'm going to make every year, yet somehow I still always fall into that trap. And that really is it's the difference maker. It's the thing that keeps me from literally, I feel I could be wrong, but just being a really elite fantasy player. And it's my bias with these injured guys that have done it before. I really need to get over it. Like I had this fad where like, I just had to get Jacob DeGrom. It was just seemed like, oh, 33 overall. Like, oh, I got to smash this. Yeah, I have a first round pick. I'll grab Acuna and then I'll grab him with another pitcher. Like, oh, Woodruff, who was, out most of the year. Like, it's a smash. And then these things happen. Carlos Rodon with that deal there. Like, I'm just really not going to do it this year. Like anyone with arm problems, coming off injury, like spring training injury, like anything. If they even have a freaking scratch on them, I'm gonna check with Dr. Dave, and then I'm gonna just not draft them.
Well, you know who was having some problems in spring training was Felix Bautista. I think he's turned out okay. I think for every guy who douches it, there's a success story, right? And I can't shade because I was somebody who every time Chris Bryant was available in the ninth round, I'm like, this guy was a fourth rounder last year. He's gonna be healthy this year. Chris Bryant and Coors, like I gotta click it. And he's just like such a complete ass bag. I mean, it's just like tanking my portfolio. So maybe you're onto something here, Vlad.
Well, so, Sammy, I gotta put you to the test then. What about your boy Tatis?
I was not in on Tatis. I did not draft Tatis anywhere. I was kind of off him. I just thought, man, because he's going at the 1-2 turn, and it's like, A, this guy's got character issues. And then B, he's got like legitimate shoulder issues. He's actually been, batting average has been kind of whatever. I think he's like around 260-ish. But his power speed has been really, really strong for the amount of games he's played. So, I don't think if you drafted Tatis, you didn't profit big off that pick, and yet it also didn't tank you. I think it was kind of merely okay. But I will say he's a guy who next year, I don't know what ADP will be, but he will be probably mid to late first round.
Well, that was going to be my question, you guys. I put you on the spot. If I put you on the spot and I say you have the, let's say, the sixth pick, and how do you rank these three guys? Who would be your order of in which you'd pick them? Fernando Tatis, Julio Rodriguez, and Corbin Carroll. And just forget about who else might be in that top five or whatever.
Yeah.
Who would you take right now? If you had a draft now for 2024.
I think most people will still go Carroll at this point. I think I would probably go Tatis. And the reason I would is because I have this theory. There's only two players in baseball who have a legitimate chance at 40-40. Like, if they play a full season, they will almost certainly go 40-40 and it, or somewhere near it. And that's amazing, right? There's like four or five.
Acuna and Tatis, you mean?
Acuna and Tatis. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's it. I think Corbin Carroll's wonderful. I mean, he's a hell of a ball player. I thought he'd hit 20 homers for the whole season, maybe. And he's got like 21 right now. I mean, he's a really great player. But
yeah,
I think Tatis is like a generational type of player. So I would probably go there.
Full agreement. Full agreement. You're chasing upside. And I mean, can he stay healthy for a full season? It'd be nice to see, but I'm with you. I don't even think it's a debate, Vlad. I think that his ceiling is – I don't think anybody has his ceiling. I mean, honestly, he could go 50-50. Would you really be surprised if he went 50-50? I wouldn't.
But it also depends who you ask, too, because – okay, so I was out on Tatis this year, and I'm probably going to be in on him this year, and I do agree I would take him over the other two. But I also draft less conservatively than a lot of people that are really good – that are consistent in the NFBC and that win money every year.
John Posma wouldn't touch Tatis.
I don't think he would touch him there.
I got to think, Vlad,
what would Posma do?
You've said this before, Vlad. I think you're being a little too hard on yourself. I think you got to try a year where you don't do any of the all the work, the grind,
content.
The content. I mean. Yeah. Like you said, it's just so much time. So, I mean, you're intrigued, right? Aren't you? Like, you want to do a year where you just focus on playing and not content?
I could never do that. I would never do that to people. But yeah. But if like everyone collectively say, hey, Vlad, just take the year off. I mean, this is not going to happen. But it was interesting. I wonder if I would do better or not without being open kimono on stuff. And that's not to say that everyone listens to me. I mean, most people don't even know. Play fantasy, don't even kind of know who I am, but it would be interesting.
Let's call a spade a spade. Like amongst high stakes players, like your fab column is like kind of the standard. Like it is. I don't know what percentage, but pretty much everybody will reference that when they're going in on their weekly stuff. 100%.
But if I was off the grid for a year, I would still probably make those like upside injury risk type picks. That's the thing. That's really, I think, what's missing, what's not clicking. Couple more guys. I mean, anyways, let's. I got a few more guys I want to talk to you guys about here. And this is these are some interesting cats here. And one has been absolutely horrendous, and that's Lance Lynn. And then he came to the Dodgers, and I wonder, is he going to be one of those quote unquote? I mean, I don't always like using the term league winner, especially in baseball, because it takes just like so many pieces of the pie. But like, could he be awesome the rest of the season here? And then on the flip side, where are you guys with Yusei Kikuchi? Because that dude has had an incredible turnaround this season. So far, his ERA since the All-Star break, it's the best in baseball. It's 1.24 since over his last five starts. Big key to that is a reduction in his walk rate. It was 13% last year, the worst in the majors. It's now down to 7%. He's having very consistent starts, pitching really well in Toronto. So where are you guys at with Lynn and Kikuchi rest of the season?
I would say I'm generally positive on both. I mean, you know, Lance Lynn's that guy. He just came from one of the worst situations in baseball to one of the best. And there's no, I mean, the guy's, his strikeout rate is like super, super good this year. I mean, he doesn't, in many ways, he doesn't look appreciably different. He's like striking out like 20% of batters, right? He doesn't look appreciably different in some ways than he ever has, right? Like his Sierra, if you are, it's like 391. That's about what he's done for his career. It's 390 for his career. So it's like a little bit reductive to just be like, oh yeah, here's his expected and here he is. But like, he's obviously gotten really unlucky. He obviously still has a strong skill set. He's going to a much better team, good ballpark. I mean, all the things around him to succeed. I don't really understand why like he wouldn't in some ways, right? He's just been snake bitten this year, just as everybody in Chicago has. Kikuchi.
Yeah, except for Robert Jr.
Right. he got
except for he hurt his hand, unfortunately. Wow. Hopefully he's okay.
He's okay.
Benintendi has two home runs, so you know he's just a couple back. And Kikuchi's that guy. I think we've already always known he's got talent, right? But he's always been held back by that control and command. He's improved it. I don't know enough to be like, is this really sticky? Because there have been a lot of cases of guys who have gone through a month or two stretch, or even a full season stretch, where their control and command improved from their baselines, and then they kind of reverted. And so, yeah, you might have to have our boy Doug Thorburn back on to do some mechanics analysis and be like, yo, what's changed with this guy in terms of like mechanics, and can it be sticky? Because I think he's got great stuff, and he always has, but like I'm a little wary of him reverting after a hot stretch. So,
man, I don't know. Like I wanted to. Okay, I don't even want to talk about. I was going to say something about Lance Lynn, but whatever. About these Cleveland guys. So Logan Allen, he looks pretty good. He's lefty, he's okay. Kind of been slipping a little bit of recent, but these other guys, I mean, this is a very bright future here with this Cleveland Guardians pitching staff. Tanner Bibee has just become so dependable. I don't know how I got so lucky to just one day in the middle of May just decide, like, this is the guy I'm going to go in on. And I know, Sammy, we've talked about this on a previous podcast, but like, I just got really lucky. I had no idea it'd be him. And he, every week he's been so dependable. On occasion, I was like, okay, this is the blow up start. Let me bench him. And it doesn't happen. And he's just a gem. And he did the same thing. I think he fired 7 or 6 scoreless innings against the Blue Jays a couple days ago. He's just incredible. Seven.
Yeah. I mean, he's balling.
And then Gavin Williams, like, so this kid's supposed to be even better. And then he's hadn't been reaching even 5 innings over the last couple games and last couple starts. And then just bam, hits him with a 12 strikeout outing. And you kind of see that ace potential and what he is. So I wonder where these guys are going to go next year. And then I also wonder, just kind of in addition to that, your boy, Sammy, who you invested in, Yuri Perez, like what he can do here down the stretch. I hear he's got, you know, at least 10 starts in him, if possible, if they need him, you know, even through the playoffs. But like, you know, where these guys are going to even end up for draft season next summer, spring.
I mean, I think the ADP, to Prep's point earlier, like the ADP is really going to depend on how they finish out, right? Because we are going to be so invested in like what happened recently. You know what I mean? So it's like that's kind of how they're going to fall, I think, you know, and it's such a small sample, right? If Yuri gets dinged up in a couple of his starts this year and ends up with like a 350, 130 or something like that, I'll be like, you know, he's okay. So I think that'll be interesting. But I think the Cleveland guys are just such an interesting case, because if you go down that list, all of them are overperforming their pref reels by a ton, right? It's pretty crazy. Like even a guy like Savali, 234 ERA, if you average his xFIP in Sierra, 465. Bibee has a 292 ERA, 430, right? Gavin Williams, a 290 ERA, a 450 xFIP in Sierra. Logan Allen, 365 versus 424. Even Shane Bieber, who's dusted. I mean, he's just like, you know, throwing 89 mile an hour meatballs and now his elbows barking. 377 versus about 435. Even this kid Curry, who's made 4 starts for him, he's got like 60 innings. He's got a 295 ERA. His average xFIP in Sierra is almost 5. And so I think we need to get somebody really smart, get, you know, Alex Chamberlain or something on this. And what is in the water in Cleveland? Like, what's going on here? It's one thing for one pitcher to outperform by like multiple runs. their expected stuff, but like for an entire staff to do it is really something. Is it the defense? Is it something they're doing with runners on? I'm not sure, but I think that may be a significant key to next season, is really finding out like the stickiness of these overperformances by Cleveland. It's really something to a man.
I mean, it's a pitching factory bias too. I mean, by the way, about Yuri Perez, I think he's going to get pushed up. I think he's going to get pushed up more than most guys. So, but as far as the Cleveland guys, I don't know. I think Bybee's probably the one that people are going to focus in on. But you're right, there's so many of them, so it'll be interesting to see where they all go. But I think they'll mostly get pushed up, probably for the wrong reasons.
And so just looking back at just at 1 year sample size, you had, it was kind of a mixed bag, but basically Bieber's, expected and peripherals were right around his ERA. So he was, he was under three, and this is talking 2022. And, so was his XFIP and his FIP. Everything was under three as well. McKenzie was the big one. And I remember a lot of people were fading McKenzie just on that alone. In some respects that he was, was quite lucky. He was lucky at a 292 ERA, and then his XFIPs here, everything was about a run higher. And then Aaron Civale, he didn't, he only pitched 97 innings that year, but he was on the flip side. He was very unlucky. So he had an ERA around five, and basically XFIP was about a run lower than that.
Yeah,
so
he had a super low whip, right? And you're just like, oh, this guy's all right. Why is he getting decked?
Yep, exactly. And then we won't talk about Zach Plesac, who I don't know. Will he be back in baseball? We don't know. One last question for you guys. Mitch Keller, I want to know how you feel about him the rest of the season. So obviously in the first half, he was amazing. He had his ups and downs as well. But since the All-Star break, by far the worst pitcher in baseball. So an ERA of almost over nine in five starts. He's owned four. Nobody even has qualified has over six basically ERA. So it's not bad. And then what's intriguing is that his swinging strike rate, of all things, is something I noticed, was under 9% when he was good, and it's over 11% now that he hasn't been so good. And then BABIP, obviously, to death, which shows some bad fortune as well, 402 BABIP. But so he's in the second part of a two-step this week. He's going to get the Reds at home. I think he did all right against the Braves, but still like nine hits in a few innings. So his schedule after this coming up would be the Twins in Minnesota, who strike out a lot, but can hit homers. Then he gets the Cubs at home, then the Royals on the road, and then his first two-step is going to be in a month, his next one. It's versus Milwaukee and at Atlanta, if it works out that way with no rainouts. Then the Yankees, and then at Great American against the Reds. Just thinking about that, looking at that, if it happens to work out in that fashion, is that somebody you're holding in 12-teamers, 15-teamers? Do you have Mitch Keller?
I have him, and I'm going to drop him so I don't make the wrong decision with him every time or hold on to him too long. I mean, he's one of those guys, Vlad. He is who we thought he is. His whole career, he's been all over the place, constantly tries to reinvent himself, and constantly goes back to being the lemon who he was. He was great in the minors, and he came up. He couldn't miss bats. Then he was great this year. Then he sucks. I can't think of a guy I trust less than Mitch Keller. Maybe Artie Moreno, yeah, no, I'm out on him completely.
I think Prep speaks for all of us. He kind of, he's this guy, and it's almost funny. Like you were same team. You remember Charlie Morton when he kept trying to reinvent himself?
And
trying to pitch like Roy Halladay. Like you couldn't even like it was crazy when I was so in on him the year he changed his motion. It looked exactly like Halladay's. It was wild, and he had such.
They called him Doc Jr.
Yeah, and he still got bombed, and it was unbelievable. And it was only until he turned 33 years old and just started throwing the shit out of the ball that he got any good, right? I kind of agree with Prep in the sense that like he kind of is who he is. We knew in the first half he was just riding cloud nine. He was running hotter than the sun's ass, and in the second half he's just been the stone low. I mean, the guy's the freaking worst. I hate to give a cop-out answer, but the reality is he's somewhere in the middle of that. He's not nearly as good as he was in the first half. nobody's as bad as he's been in the second half. You referenced the 402 BABIP against, like, you know, good luck sustaining that. But, you know, he's shown to be, over the course of his career, a high whip pitcher, right? And he added some strikeouts, and that's cool. But, like, if you can't, you know, get less than like a 1.3 whip or whatever, like, you're just not going to do that well overall. And he hasn't really shown he could do that. Certainly, I wouldn't, you know, touch him with your team, Vlad, if I was in a 12. But in 15s, I'll tell you, desperation is a stinky cologne, and the pitching wire is thin. So if he was available there, I'd probably snap him up. I mean, shit, I'm a desperate man. But I wouldn't go near that Atlanta two-step. Like, you are just asking to get buried.
I mean, we've all been there. You've all kind of, like, looked at the Zach Greinke two-step or Jordan Lyles. Like, you know, you're just not going to do it. You know, I'm not going to write about it. I'm not going to add them to my, you know, FabBid article, but, like, still, you got to think about it. So, guys, thank you very, very much, both of you, for coming, and especially because it's you know, it's middle of the week. It's been a long work day for both of us. We're all on the West Coast, but we're starting to record this at 9 at night. We're all getting really tired. So, appreciate you guys for coming on. Before I kind of give you guys a last word, I did want to plug that started a new, it's not a new podcast, but Matthew Davis, my colleague in baseball, Nelson Souza, is one of the best football analysts and high stakes players around. They've had a football podcast on FTN for the last couple of years. I've joined them there now, hosting that. And so if you guys are around and are into fantasy football, give that a check out, and have a special for you if you want to get in on that high stakes package, which gives you access to Nelson's fade list, which is pretty amazing. Access to him basically 24/7, I guess, when he's not sleeping, on the Discord channel there, and just really good stuff from me, Maddie, and mostly Nelson. But High Stakes 20 is a special that I'll only give out here on the podcast to get 20% off of our high stake package on ftnfantasy.com. Also, if you get a chance to rate, review, and subscribe to both either this podcast or the High Stakes FTN Fantasy Football podcast, that would be super awesome. But either way, guys, I have you on because you're awesome to talk to. I always know that we're going to have great conversations. Sammy, I appreciate you for helping me rile up the prep monster. And we
did I live up to expectations? Did I go into
the first
100%.
Half?
And Vlad, you should add to the high stakes football package. You should have prep give his 20th round backup tight end sleeper of the year. And I think that'll get the people coming.
Anytime, prep knows he's got an open invitation for my tight end sleeper.
Thanks for being so generous, Vlad. Enjoyed it, guys. Thanks so much.
Appreciate it.
Sammy, what you got on the pods going on?
You know, latest on Read 'Em and Weep. I just did a whole series on the World Series of Poker. So if you guys want to know what the experience was like, check it out. I just did hours and hours and hours of that shit. So yeah, be cool. Some people listen to it.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Sammy Reed at Sammy Reed FI on Twitter or X. I'm sorry. And then Daniel Prepas, the surly attorney. He's at Studs Terkel fan.
There it is.
On X. So for Dan and Sammy, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.